Alrighty, hello again, everyone, and welcome to it. It is the Derek Hunter Podcast for the 24th of April, 2024. It's Wednesday already, thank God. I'm Derek Hunter. I'm just very cold at the moment. I don't know why. I've got my fleece on, and it's zipped up all the way to the neck. I look like a douchey college professor, but I got the scraggly hair to go along with it. Anyway, hope you're having a great one. Don't forget patreon.com/DerekHunterPodcast or DerekHunter.locals.com. Support the program, s'il vous plaît. Help me warm up, huh? How about that? All right, let's get started so we can get done. Now let's talk about our president. It was Earth Day yesterday. I think technically Earth Day was on Saturday, but it was observed on... Why is it... It's not a holiday, so what does it matter when it's observed? Maybe I'm wrong, but I thought because there was like some sort of expo, or I saw a sign for an expo about Earth Day, get involved, come and go to the Green Expo or whatever. And like that was Saturday, although maybe they couldn't. Earth Day 2024. I guess it was technically, I don't know. Who cares? Honestly, it was created by a guy who murdered his girlfriend and kept her body in his closet. It's a true story. Look it up. So, yeah. Just let me see. He's a horrible human being. But the fact, Ann Coulter usually writes a column every week, or every week, every year about the founder of Earth Day. And, yeah, he composted. It's very green. Ira Einhorn. Ira Samuel Einhorn, born May 15th, 1940, died April 3rd, 2020, known as the Unicorn Killer, was an American environmental activist. You know, the left insists on you got to know your history, lest you not honor the right people. Well, let's just do that. His moniker, the Unicorn, was derived from his surname, Einhorn, which means unicorn in German. An environmental activist, Einhorn was a speaker at the first Earth Day event in Philadelphia in 1970. On September 9th, 1977, Einhorn's ex-girlfriend, Holly Maddox, disappeared following a trip to collect her belongings from the apartment she and Einhorn had shared in Philadelphia. 18 months later, police found her partially decomposed body in a trunk in Einhorn's closet. It seems like a nice guy. She can't believe she broke up with him. It's a shame. After his arrest, Einhorn fled the country and spent 23 years in Europe before being extradited to the United States. He took the stand in his own defense, claiming his ex-girlfriend had been killed by CIA agents who had framed him for the crime because he knew too much about the agency's paranormal military research. Believe it or not, he was convicted of murdering Holly Maddox and served a life sentence until his death in prison on April 3rd, 2020. Boy, if you think about it, so much of the modern left is founded on the ravings of lunatics and the actions of people who are mentally unstable. You got Earth Day, this guy right, composting his grave. You know what? Super environmentally. You know, you're going to commit. I don't recommend you commit murder, but if you do, compost the body because nothing brings vegetables to life like a little bit of death and some topsoil and some Miracle-Grow. Maybe murder is the miracle in Miracle-Grow. I don't know. I've never read the ingredients. But you've got this. You've got the modern trans movement. All mentally unstable people. Oh, no. It's perfectly normal. It is not surprising that mentally unstable people are mentally unstable because, well, it's right there in the name. What's amazing is that there are so many other people who are mentally unstable, but slightly less so, who are just looking at these lunatics and going, well, we should follow you. The Trans Day of Visibility? The person who did that, I can't remember the person. If you look up Trans Day of Visibility founder, you will see somebody who, I think they're a sociology professor, it's a guy, but in drag, who looks like Oswald Cobblepot as played by Danny DeVito in whichever Batman movie he was in, just except for less attractive. Less attractive, because at least underneath you go, eh, Danny DeVito's got a little bit of charm. Can't hide all that under that makeup. No such problem for the person who founded the Trans Day of Visibility. It's almost like most, I swear to God, most of the modern left seems like a drunken game of truth or dare. It really does. I dare you to put on a dress and insist for the rest of your life that you're a woman. Like, oh, we're all right. You're going to lose. And it just goes from there. Just everything about these people is absolutely insane. It's mentally unstable. You look at it and you go, they should all be institutionalized. They look at us and they say, we should all be imprisoned because we refuse to play the game. But they should all seriously, objectively be institutionalized. There's not a lot else you can say about it. Like, there's something fundamentally wrong with you. Mentally unstable. I don't know what else it is. Anyway, with that in mind, our idiot president was out marching through the woods with Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez yesterday to celebrate Earth Day. They were probably foraging for nuts and berries. Biden probably ate a couple of worms. That's, you know, a normal day anyway. He strikes me as the type of guy. By the way, when my wife was planting flowers out in front, Bailey, the little one, was out in front getting, they have this little bug container thing that you put in there. It's got like a magnifying lid. She got a whole bunch of worms because that's what happens when you dig. Worms, look at the worms, look at the worms. I'm like, that's, okay. Now I know if I told her, there's a worm over there, go pick it up, she'd scream like a five-year-old girl because she's a five-year-old girl. But when it's discovered, when she discovers it, it's like she's the first person to ever see a worm and it must be preserved. And anyway, I made her release them back, but she got to stare at worms for a while. It was very exciting. I imagine Joe would have eaten them while sniffing my daughter's hair. So that's why he wasn't invited over. But, you know, Hunter can come by as long as he brings the party favors. You know what I'm saying? Anyway, Joe was asked about what's going on the college campuses. Now, I want you to listen to this clip because there are a couple things you need to hear from it. One is Joe's answer is very fine, people. It is equivocating between the radical anti-Semites and protesters. Now, they're very fine people, the Jews and the radicals. They're very fine people. What do you make about the anti-Semitism? I condemn the anti-Semitism, but know that they're, you know, I also condemn Israel for what they're doing. We need to talk about what's going on over there. Well, wait a second. That is both sidesism, is it not? It's both sidesism. And the reporter, as they often do, and this is what you pay attention to, jumps in and saves Joe before he's able to dig himself a deeper hole. He was about to condemn Israel, and the reporter steps in and says, well, should the president of Columbia University resign? See, they always know. They're terrified. You can't let Joe speak for too long or Joe will say something stupid. Just science. Don't blame me. And so they know when to jump in. You see this when he sits down with Scott Pelley for an interview. You see this when he sat down with Univision, where he starts to go off the rails a little bit, and the reporter nudges him back onto. So they should do. That's what it is. That sort of thing. If you've ever talked to anybody, every once in a while somebody will go off and kind of forget what they were saying or go off on a tangent, and you guys kind of elbow them a little bit and go, nah, back on point. And you go, oh, yeah, that's right. And they answer it. It happens all the time with Joe because he's senile. It happens sometimes with people because they're people. But the more senile you get, the more it happens with. So keep that in mind because they saved Joe. A real reporter interested in getting what the president of the United States it's tough to use the word thinks, but that's the only one that applies, what Joe Biden thinks of what's going on. And then it's clear that he mishears the second question and assumes that he, well, thinks he heard, what do you think of the president of Colombia resigning? Which is decidedly not what was said, because he's that, at least that's the question he answers, even though it wasn't the question that was asked. So keep all of those in mind as you listen to this.
You condemn the anti-Semitic protests on college campuses.
I condemn the anti-Semitic protests. That's why I've set up a program to deal with that. I also condemn those who don't understand what's going on with the Palestinians and their, how they're being moved.
Should the Columbia University president resign?
Right this way, this way.
I didn't know that. I'll have to find out more about it.
Should she resign?
I didn't know that. No, should she resign? I didn't know that. That's not an answer to the question. Which way did they go? Sandwich. What? But you notice in there, and he's talking about, I also condemn the, what are you going to talk about the Palestinians and condemn the way, that's when he was about to say the way that Israel has been treating them. That's where he was about to go. There's not a whole lot else that could have come from that. There's not a whole lot else where he could have been going with that. And the reporter jumped in and asked, what about should the president of Columbia University resign? Don't say it, old man. Now, that's both sides-ism. Now, if you believe Joseph Robinette Biden, first of all, I have some oceanfront property in Arizona to sell you. But if you believe the man and all that he's said, you're dumb. But secondly, he ran for president for one express purpose, one express purpose only, one reason, not purpose, but one reason only. He watched what had unfolded, what horror hath God wrought on Charlottesville when those white supremacists in polo shirts with tiki torches went marching and a disgusting display of about 20 people. I don't know, they're jerks, they're bigots, they're garbage people, but there's like 20 of them, all right? There's more people per square foot in Columbia Quad calling for the extermination of Jews than saying Jews will not replace us. Both are disgusting, both deserve to be outed, but watching Jews will not replace us with the Tiki Torch Brigade of morons was what caused Joe Biden to run for president in the first place. That and Donald Trump calling them very fine people. That's a lie he repeats often. He still repeats to this day. It is something that has been passively fact-checked by the media. Is the entirety of what Donald Trump said is available on the internet, and people have listened to it, people have read the transcript, and they recognize that if anybody who is gullible enough to go, hey, wait a second, we've got very fine, he didn't call neo-Nazis very fine people. He said that they need to be condemned. So what are you talking? If you look into it, you'll learn the truth. So they had to sort of passively fact check. They don't go back to it very often because they don't really want to draw attention to it. But to cover their rear ends, they have to talk about it. They had to do it. Joe Biden has no such concerns. He continually goes back to the well and says he called the neo-Nazis very fine people, just like he said they called Mexicans rapists and all of that. And I just always ask the question, if Donald Trump is so terrible, then why do Democrats have to lie about him all the time? Just about everything. If my opponent is terrible, my response to everything in a debate would be, did you hear what they just said? No, I yield my time to that moron over there. Go ahead, keep talking. Or, here's exactly what they just said, in full context. No need for me to spin it. But the Democrats don't do that, weirdly. So here, again, is what Donald Trump actually said in regards to Charlottesville. So you can decide for you. You don't need me to explain it for you. You can decide for yourself whether or not Donald Trump is calling neo-Nazis and white supremacists very fine people or not.
You're putting what you're calling the alt-left and white supremacists on the same moral plane.
I'm not putting anybody on a moral plane. What I'm saying is this. You had a group on one side and you had a group on the other, and they came at each other with clubs, and it was vicious, and it was horrible, and it was a horrible thing to watch. But there is another side. There was a group on this side, you can call them the left, you've just called them the left, that came violently attacking the other group. So you can say what you want, but that's the way it is.
On both sides, sir, you said there was hatred, there was violence on both sides.
I do think there's blame, yes. I think there's blame on both sides. You look at both sides. I think there's blame on both sides, and I have no doubt about it, and you don't have any doubt about it either.
And
if you reported it accurately, you would say.
They showed up in Charlottesville, and
you had some very bad people in that group. But you also had people that were very fine people on both sides. You had people in that group, excuse me, I saw the same pictures as you did. You had people in that group that were there to protest the taking down of, to them, a very, very important statue and the renaming of a park from Robert E. Lee to another name. George Washington was a slave owner. Was George Washington a slave owner? So will George Washington now lose his status? Are we going to take down statues to George Washington? How about Thomas Jefferson? What do you think of Thomas Jefferson? You like him? Okay, good. Are we going to take down the statue? Because he was a major slave owner. Now, are we going to take down his statue? So you know what? It's fine. You're changing history. You're changing culture. And you had people, and I'm not talking about the neo-Nazis and the white nationalists, because they should be condemned totally. But you had many people in that group other than neo-Nazis and white nationalists, okay? And the press has treated them absolutely unfairly.
Now, did you hear that last little bit? They always leave that out, that it was in the midst of a heated exchange with the press. Have you ever heard Joe Biden in a heated exchange with the press? Have you ever heard Joe Biden in any sort of exchange with the press? Have you ever heard a Jim Acosta interrupt the president of the United States, interrupt Joe Biden going, hey, but what about the, no, you're not talking about, hey, come on, what about, have you heard it at all? No, you haven't. Joe Biden won't go in within a country mile of that kind of exchange. Instead, they interrupt him when he's about to say something stupid, when everybody can see that he's about to say something stupid, and they protect him. You don't want to, you're about to go off the rails, Mr. President, don't say that. How about something unrelated to this? How about irrelevant? There was no questions yesterday about Joe Biden as he talked about the importance of Earth Day. As I'm walking with AOC, the importance of Earth Day, it's so wonderful. Then why is it that every weekend you go to Rehoboth Beach, you fly a 757 fully loaded with a 23-car entourage to the beach? Couldn't you, I don't know. Just go to Camp David. It's kind of, why do you have to go there? Well, because the visitors' logs at Camp David are part of public record, whereas the visitors' logs for Joe Biden's homes, his mansions, are kept under the guise that they are none of the public's business, that it's all just a bunch of friends coming over to see how good old Grandpa Sniffy Fingers is doing. Nobody would ever ask those questions. That'd be too much like journalism. They don't do that anymore. On this issue of anti-Semitism, there is a Democrat out of New York named Jared Moskowitz. He's a member of Congress. And he sort of takes up my guilt by association. It's not guilt by association, though. It's not guilt by, it's, you're, look, if you march with the Klan, you go, well, the Klan, if I'm at a rally, and I don't go to any rallies or any march or anything, but if I'm at a march for whatever it is, and these horrible people show up, I'm going to sit there and probably at least rethink my position for a second. Like, what do you, I'm on the side of, let's just say Antifa shows up. whatever it was, I'm protesting the new tax, a new whatever. I'm like, oh, this is outrageous. The government sucks. And then here comes Antifa, and they're going, yeah, saying the same stuff as me. I'd be like, wait, maybe I need to rethink my position here. I would probably step back and go, you know what, I'm going to head home. At least think it through. So if you're saying that the protests have been infiltrated by agitators, outside agitators, first of all, it shows a wild ignorance in the history of the left. But at a certain point, when people start screaming at Jewish students, I am Hamas, you might go, whoa, wait a second. I don't like the war, but not a big fan of paragliding terrorists machine gunning down innocent concert goers and then raping a bunch of them. I'm not a big fan of that. But they don't. They don't. And again, if you stay when the riot starts, you go from a protester to a rioter. Those are just the rules. There's nobody innocent. And right, what did we learn? What are we told from January the 6th? Anybody who entered the Capitol is illegally trespassing. It doesn't matter if you climbed in through a window or you walked in through a door that was held open for you by Capitol Police. It doesn't matter if you put your feet up on Nancy Pelosi's desk and started rummaging through things, or you just took a couple of selfies in the rotunda. You need to be charged. It needs to be on record that you are part of this mob trying to overthrow democracy. Well, why is it at a riot or a mostly peaceful protest that there are people who are guilty of certain things and then other people who are not? It's the justification these leftist prosecutors use to drop charges against everybody. Well, it was heat of the moment, a lot of people involved, hard to say which brick was thrown by which person that hit the police officer in the hand. Like, well, if you're throwing bricks, I don't really care if you're throwing bricks and they're bouncing off the ground or they're bouncing off the cops. You're trying to hit the cops. You're throwing bricks. That's the problem. Do you have to really, does everybody have to initial their own brick in order to get prosecuted? Is that a get out of violence against police officers free card? If you don't, you get 10 people to throw bricks and one, it's like the old execution by gunfire, three riflemen all aimed at the heart, but there's a live round in only one of the guns and two blanks in the others. So nobody knows who shot who. Well, first of all, God knows. Secondly, does it really matter? If it was a summary execution of somebody, they just grabbed somebody off the street. If it were the communists seizing power and they grabbed a local politician off the streets, put him up against the wall, and there were three guns, two with blanks, and they shot and killed him. And then sanity was restored and those people were arrested. Would they all get off? Because, well, we just can't tell which one fired the shot. Or were they all complicit in it? I would say they're all complicit in it. And I would even charge the person who gave them the blindfold and the cigarette. That's just me. That's common sense. That's what Jared Moskowitz is up against. And it tells you something. Jared Moskowitz is a Jewish member of Congress. He's disgusted. He's repulsed by what he's seeing from his own party. But it tells you how committed progressives are to the progressive cause that he criticizes them. But he can't quite bring himself to condemn the whole damn thing. Can't do it. Comes close a little bit. Not that close, but he can't just point out that it's all of this and it's a horrible thing and it's inherent in the progressive movement. It's been there since the beginning. It is inherent in the Democratic Party. Can't bring himself to say just that because progressives are progressives first. And it's weird watching somebody wrestle with an individual existential threat. It really, truly is. He recognizes that these people would like to see him dead. But on the other hand, they're going to vote for Joe Biden. They're going to vote for him. It's a weird thing, but he does get more critical of them than anything else, and he does illustrate this sort of BS argument about the guilt by association. Listen to it for yourself. This is from CNN last night.
Yeah, I mean, I think you raised such an important point, which is maybe it's not everyone, but if there are some people in the ranks doing that, should they be expelled? Should there be a willingness to do that? I wonder what you think about the university's leadership in this moment. Do you think, as some of your Republican colleagues do, that the Columbia president should actually resign as a result of how this has been handled?
Well, I mean, listen, I don't like guilt by association, but if I was participating in a protest and I was trying to do it peacefully, right, and my ceasefire now protest became a bomb Tel Aviv protest, maybe I would leave. Or if we were holding up the Palestinian flag and all of a sudden people started screaming pro-Hamas things, maybe I would leave. But that's not what happened, Abby. That's not what happened. They were integrated, and it took 5 days for them to make a statement saying, oh, that's not us. The only reason they made that statement is because they're losing the narrative, because unfortunately they're being exposed. And so, look, what should happen to the university president? Here's what I recommend to the president of Columbia. I don't know what the right thing to do is, but if she wants to know what the wrong thing to do is, she can call the former presidents of Harvard and UPenn, who let this nonsense go on their campuses. And Columbia is way past those two universities.
And then, well, why wouldn't you just go the full way? Why wouldn't you just condemn these people? He's trying to give them the warning shot across the bow. Look, you need to do this, and you got to do something. Talk to the president. First of all, the president of Harvard wasn't fired over anti-Semitism. The anti-Semitism added heat. But then Christopher Rufo discovered that Claudine Gay academically was a mile wide and an inch deep. She didn't do much of anything. She's mostly a plagiarist. So, yeah, it's kind of a different story there. The president of UPenn simply couldn't condemn anti-Semitism. They both were like, before Congress, boy, it depends on how far you take the anti-Semitism. You can call for the death of Jews, but once you start genociding on campus, we might have a problem with it. And genociding at the dining hall is strictly forbidden against anybody at Harvard. Now, in the Quad, it's a different story. Genocide all you want. You ever heard anybody, an adult, sort of yoga pose themselves into such a pretzel that they have to live in fear of their party's radicals, even though the party's radicals want to destroy Israel, and some of them, a great many of them, possibly without recognizing, because if you ask any of these people, what does from the river to the sea mean? Well, it means geographically, I think it's a housing development. That is, they've got a little bit of water, maybe a lazy river in the backyard next to the swimming. I don't really know, but I'm serious about it. You ask these people, they don't know what they're talking about, most of them. They're ignorant. A lot of them went to public schools. A lot of them are Democrats from Democrat areas. But what they're advocating for, it'd be like somebody chanting Heil Hitler. I don't know what that means. What is it? An argument could be made if you went to public schools. You have no idea what that comes from. You had those idiots at the headquarters of the Teamsters learning how to chant death to Israel and death to America in Arabic. Now, they weren't mistaken. They had no ambiguity. They knew exactly what it was they were chanting. They were being taught this by somebody who told them what it was. But there are a bunch of people at the various rallies, marches, and protests that they will go to that they will be chanting things without knowing what it is. Because why? Because you get swept up in the moment. And generally, dumb people are very easily swept up in the moment. It's that mentality of people, the excitement of them. It's a social event of the season. We're having a blast. Oh, yes. We're out here for justice. You convince yourself that you're out there for a cause that is just. Then you can, it's not that big of a stretch from there to convince yourself that anybody who isn't out there or anybody who is not with you who is out there is against justice. The police trying to prevent you from burning down that church or that business, they are opposed to justice. They are a part of the problem. You're either part of the solution or you're a part of the problem. When you think in those black and white terms, it's very seductive. It's very easy to wipe all nuance away from life because it makes things easier. Dumb people can't think very nuanced. They can't think very critically. And so you just wipe it away and you go, oh, okay, well, it's us or them. It's us or them. Then the rhetoric gets turned up. The joyous mentality turns to anger. And then somebody with a pocket full of rocks starts throwing the rocks. And you're like, oh, man, this moment. And the frenzy, the people are running around and people are getting excited and you have a choice. You go, I'm out of here. I didn't sign up for this. Or you look at it and they offer you a rock and you're like, yeah, sure, all right. Because you're throwing it in a way that you don't see where it lands. You don't know where it's going. You're just throwing a rock. What does it matter? If you don't see it, did you really hurt anybody? Did you take somebody's eye out if you just throw it in one direction? I understand this. When I was 17 years old, I went to a midnight showing of the Rocky Horror Picture Show. Why? Because it was Halloween. There was a curfew in Detroit. We weren't allowed to be out, but it didn't matter. We went anyway. And we're in there, and the place is crowded. People are dressed up. We had a whole row in the theater of people. And at some point before the movie even started, it was still light out in the theater, a Coke comes flying over, no lid on it, about half full, lands in my lap perfectly. Like, you couldn't have placed it any better. It landed on my seat, sloshes around, doesn't really get me wet at all. It's like, holy crap. Can't believe that. Now, being an idiot 17-year-old, and there are few things dumber than a teenage boy, I looked around real quick. It was still light, again, not bright. I grabbed it, and I just threw it behind me. Just whoosh, right over my, I don't know how many rows behind me it went. I didn't care. All I knew is I threw it. Couple seconds later, I hear, I was swept up in the moment. Well, who wasn't swept up in the moment was the guy whose girlfriend it hit. He comes climbing over the seats. I was on the end. He could have just walked down the aisle and got me. He puts me in, not a chokehold, because I was against it. He leans me back against the seat. I don't know. He's probably 30 years old. Leans me back against the seat with his hand on my neck going, you, this, that, or the other thing. You throw another Coke like that, and I'm going to kick your ass. And I, being an idiot 17-year-old, responded, I didn't throw any Coke. Everybody saw me throw the Coke. It's just so stupid. I saw you throw it. You hit my girlfriend. I didn't throw any Coke. And now here comes my hero, the usher. Vest on, shirt buttoned up, tucked in, black pants, and a flashlight on, even though the house lights are still up. The movie hasn't started. He's got a flashlight on. He doesn't say, get off of him. What are you doing? You're going to kill him. My hero rides in and says, you're going to have to let him go, sir. The movie's about to start. Yeah, what? That's it? And he says, he's throwing Coke. And I said, I didn't throw any Coke. And he just says, you're going to have to let him go, sir. The movie's about to start. And so the guy gives you, he doesn't just let go. He gives you that, you know, that thing where he pushes you a little bit further and then lets you go. And then he doesn't climb back. He doesn't, like, go to the aisle, which he was, like, one seat away from the aisle at the time. He climbs back over the four rows or whatever it was. And I fully expected this guy to beat the crap out of me after the movie was over. He didn't. I never saw him again. But it was one of those moments where I got swept up in the frenzy of the popcorn throwing and the toast being chucked around and the costume excitement of the moment. It can happen. But then I stopped being 17. At a certain point, these people have to stop being 17, especially when they get to be about 30, don't you think? I was just about to move off this, but I just saw this because this is how it always works. This is how it always works. I'm surprised I didn't see this sooner. And these Gaza encampments up at the background looks like Colombia. They're all wearing masks. They're all super proud of what they're doing. They just don't want to be identified. They're all super proud of what they're doing. They just don't want anybody to know who they are. Well, there's all sorts of ways to identify you morons, and you don't understand that. I don't know what to tell you. The mask doesn't do anything other than make you look like a complete moron because it's outside and hot and you're wearing a mask and a hat. And all it does is draw more attention to you because you're desperately trying to hide your identity because you're super proud of what you're doing, right? You absolutely believe in what you're doing. That's why you don't want anybody to know you're doing it. But you're so stupid that you're also posting on social media there. So, like, okay, we have a general sense of what you look like. You're posting, everybody wants everybody to know that they're involved because you get woke points online. And that's what the Achilles heel is if future employers make these famous people famous. And then they go, let's see what Jenny Thompson did while in college. Oh, Jenny Thompson camped out there. Oh, now, you know what? We don't need Jenny. There's nothing special about Jenny Thompson. We'll get somebody else. There are a million Jenny Thompsons. There's only one person dumb enough to be you. But they always put these little lists of rules together. They don't like rules. They're against society. And if you want to participate in their little collective, you got to follow these rules to protest against the rules. You got to protest. You got to follow, obey in order to participate in a protest against obedience or something. So they got this Gaza Solidarity Encampment Community Guidelines. And they have three exclamation points that where the dot is replaced by a heart. So, you know, they're totally for serious. We commit to remain grounded in why we enter this space as an act of solidarity with the Palestinian people. Okay. No desecration of the land. No littering. See, good people don't need to be told not to litter. They just don't litter. If you've ever been to the aftermath of a left-wing rally, it literally looks like somebody took a septic tank and dumped it all over the place, right? A septic tank where they flushed everything they shouldn't have. The whole list of things, do not flush this, that, or the other thing. And like, yeah, we threw it all in there. And we flushed it in there. We're going to dump it out on the mall down there. There's frogs. I don't know what these people eat, but it's just a mess everywhere. We recognize our role as visitors and, for many of us, colonizers in this. You're an invading force from another land? Wow. So you're paying out-of-state tuition? Or how does that work? Is there foreign student tuition? Colonizers on this land. We camp on colonized land. Pepe, Hokie, I don't even know what the hell that is. The tribe at some point. Look, they took the beads, man. I don't know what to tell you. If you take the beads, you lose the land. Take the beads and lose the deeds, man. I don't even care. And recognize Colombia's complicity in the displacement of black and brown Harlem community. Huh? I don't know. I'm not a historian. I also don't care. But I don't think, what did they do? They send in the, we want to make an overly priced university there. Go in and burn some black people out of some buildings, and then we can seize the land. Now, I think at the time that Colombia was founded, probably there was some land available, and they did it, right? I got to look this up now because it doesn't make any sense that they are doing that. So it's a private university. What year is it? But do you... Columbia University, City of New York. Established 1754. Yeah, really? Seriously? 17. Now, maybe at some point they expanded. I imagine that they expanded. But yeah, Colombia's been around a little while. I would even posit that it had been around before Harlem. Right? But these people are idiots. Black and brown people of Harlem. Yeah. No drugs or alcohol consumption inside the camp. We want to ensure people feel comfortable in this space. Please keep substance use outside the camp. There's a needle section over there just outside the barricade. You know you're dealing with quality people when they can't go without a rock a crack long enough to get justice. Respect personal boundaries. Tight quarters are not an excuse to cross physical boundaries without affirmative consent. Now, this reminds me of whatever year Occupy Wall Street was going, 2010, something like that, 2009, 2010. I wandered down through the Inner Harbor in Baltimore. I'd walk all over the city because I didn't own a car. And I marched through the encampment. And honestly, if you looked at me, you go, that guy's a stupid hippie. And I was walking through. And I like, was not arousing any suspicions amongst the people. And I took a bunch of leaflets from the Occupy Wall Street Baltimore. Why was there an Occupy Wall Street Baltimore? Because why not? These leftists are desperate to belong in anything, to anything, that they just start their own. They're the ultimate drones. And one of the things was a leaflet on how to deal with being sexually assaulted at the camp, which seemed a bit odd. Why would you? It's a bunch of hippies celebrating whatever it is hippies celebrate. Who would dare sexually assault anybody? And you go, okay. Well, you realize this was a problem. So I read on. The flyer was about don't call the police. Don't report your sex. We'll handle it internally. And like, if you're raped, and they use the word rape, if you're raped, you're free to call the police if you want. But we would prefer to handle it internally because the police are the enemy, blah, 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 et cetera, et cetera. All the left-wing talking points that they have. And it's like, what the hell? So I sent this to my friend Andrew Breitbart, and he just launched Breitbart.com. No, Big Government was still around. So I think he's like, why don't you write this up for Big Government? So I wrote it up for Big Government, screen captures and everything, and it blew up. It became a pretty big story, and then they had to officially like renounce their own policies and all that garbage. But it's common. You get a group of left-wingers together, you're going to have a lot of mentally unstable people. Genuinely mentally unstable people who don't understand the concept of boundaries, are sexual deviants in many ways, are serious substance abusers. And let's just be honest, somebody writing in blue Sharpie, hey, don't come in here tripping on acid or smoking crack when marijuana is legal. And so, you know, I guarantee you super high potent marijuana, high THC level marijuana is not considered a problem in here. And you're going to end up with people grinding, groping, touching, feeling, all that kind of stuff. That's what drugs lead to. But I love how they preempt, don't do it. Do not, no substances, respect personal boundaries. Then it comes to this. Point six, we commit to never photograph or videotape another community member without their affirmative consent. You're in public. Film them all. Videotape them all. If they take down their mask to take a bite, take a picture of it. To have a cigarette, to hit a joint, whatever it is, take a picture of it. Get these people on record. Otherwise, a good rule of thumb for everybody out there is to not participate in things that they're embarrassed by, that you're embarrassed by, right? We commit to never share the names or details of anyone we meet in this camp. We keep us safe, which includes refusing to comply with any demands if the NYPD or Columbia admin try to force us to disclose the identities of any fellow campers. Again, a sure sign that you are doing something you're not proud of is you don't want anybody to know you're doing it. Number eight, we commit to assuming best intentions, granting ourselves and others grace when mistakes are made and approaching conflict with the goal of addressing and repairing. Unless, of course, you're a filthy conservative, and then we will demand that you are fired from your job and never employed anywhere else ever again, which is why I support making all of these people famous. Number 9, please think of community members when making decisions about autonomous actions. Not everyone has consented to the same level of risk, but everyone will be implicated by decisions community members make. And right there is the acknowledgement of exactly what I have been talking about. They know it. They have a rule for it. They tell you be considerate, not don't do it, not don't punch a cop. Just recognize that if you're going to punch a cop, everybody's going to be accused of punching a cop. Don't scream at a Jew, we are Hamas, because then it will be shown on a loop on Fox News, and it'll be used to paint us all as we are Hamas. Well, you know, somebody did scream, we are Hamas, at passing Jewish students. And you know what? Nobody left the encampment because of it. So if you don't leave the encampment, if you don't wash your hands of these people, you are a party to that. Number 10, do not engage with counter-protesters. See, they're not there to have a dialogue. Anybody who isn't with them is considered a counter-protester. Anybody who asks a question, these people don't ask questions. Anybody who asks a question is a counter-protester. Do not engage with them. It says, please contact the QUAD, the C-U-A-D, I don't know what the hell that is, organizer, to suggest guidelines or changes to the above list, Free Palestine. Not East Palestine. Or East Palestine or whatever. Not them. Screw those Ohio hicks. They're overwhelmingly white and they voted for Donald Trump, so they should have their backyards treated as a chemical dump. But the Palestinians, the Hamas electing terrorists, this is who these people are. They are fully aware of everything I've said here, at least their leadership is. The leadership is not dumb. They're evil. The drones are dumb. And also evil. Because at a certain point, even the underformed mind of a teenager to somebody till they're 25 years old should come to the realization of what we're talking about. Sooner or later, you go outside without your jacket on, and eventually you go, man, it's cold. You come to that realization whether you're cognizant of the process or not. These people know exactly what they're doing. They know exactly why they're doing it. If you are a useful idiot for them, then the only part that's really operative of that statement is the idiot part. At some point, you've got to wise up, because at every point, you are held responsible for your actions, as you should be. So I'm sitting here looking at the Twitterverse, looking at the Twitter machine, the X machine, whatever you want to call it. I didn't realize it's called X, but it's always Twitter to me. I never ask for a cotton swab. I'll ask for a Q-tip. I'll never ask for a tissue. It's a Kleenex. All those things are just the name brands. That's what they are, but it's you stick it. It's Twitter. It's Twitter. You can call it X all you want. I don't care. I'll know what you're talking about. You don't need to put the caveat in there, formerly Twitter. But when I say Twitter, don't look at me like deer in the headlights going, Twitter, what's this Twitter thing? I don't understand what that is. I'm going to have to run off to X and ask people what Twitter is. But I'm looking at it, and Kamala Harris, our vice president, ugh, let that wash over your gums. Our vice president tweets out, and the Democrats are going really hard on this, really hard on this. Now, she sent this tweet on Saturday, April 20th, 4:20. She sent it at 4:20 p.m. It's just so on the nose, right? It's 4:20, it's 4:20. They're so hip, they're so cool. And it's a quote from Joe Biden's, no one should be jailed just for using or possessing marijuana. Now, it's supposed to be a quote from Joe Biden, but there's only one quotation mark. So I don't know how many people this went through. There's an opening quotation mark. There's no closing quotation mark. Just saying, as somebody who edits a lot, that problem. And so Kamala, our vice president, says nobody should have to go to jail for smoking weed. We must continue to change our nation's approach to marijuana while reforming the justice system so it finally lives up to its name. Yes, it's so it finally lives up to its name. What's unjust? Kamala Harris, as Attorney General of the United States of America, put more than 1,900 Americans, mostly men of color, in prison for drug possession, particularly marijuana possession. She did this. She caused the problem. She helped make it worse. She may well be responsible for more people of color in prison for marijuana possession than any other human being on the face of the planet. It's a true story. Look it up. But they want to pretend that it's different now. Now, she campaigned on putting people away. She laughed about putting people away in interviews back before it became fashionable for Democrats to be for legalization. Now, I have to ask you this question. Yeah, it's a rhetorical question, but has anything improved the more we've legalized drugs, the more we've decriminalized drugs? Has life improved? Now, for the junkie, the answer is yes, obviously. They don't have to worry about going to prison anymore. They can sit in the streets sit in the streets if you put an S as the second letter as well. They can do that in the streets. They're doing that in the streets a lot. But there are other cities and municipalities that are looking at the destruction that comes along with this, right? There's a pace to be, or there's a price to be paid to legalizing drugs. And that means you get a whole bunch. You say, well, it's just marijuana. Well, we'll decriminalize this. We'll decriminalize the other thing. We'll decriminalize. And, well, wait a second. What happens? A lot of more people die. A lot more people die. ABC News report just last month. 3 years ago, Oregon decriminalized small amounts of illicit drugs, from fentanyl to methamphetamine to crack. But some state leaders, local residents, and others are having second thoughts about the law, which was passed following a 2020 voter-approved ballot initiatives. Now, cities like Portland have seen a surge in homeless people encamped on the streets using drugs. What? Quote, we're out here every day, and we write the same ticket. Some people, sometimes, multiple times a day. End quote, said the chief of police, told ABC News. A call to reform the new law and give police more authority over the situation continues to grow. Some of the law's advocates argue that more time is needed to correct the problem that has been compounding for a long time. So junkies are everywhere. They are defecating in the streets. They're causing all sorts of problems. There are more of them because guess what? People are, if you're a junkie looking for some place to use your drugs, you've got a place to use your drugs. You know, oh, well, I've got to get a bus ticket to Oregon. Then I'll be fine. Well, a funny thing happened on the way to Utopia. Washington Post reports Oregon lawmakers have voted to roll back the state's drug decriminalization measure, which was hailed as a pioneering approach to addiction, but faces intense backlash as communities grapple with surges in fentanyl use and overdoses. Boy, howdy, who would have thought that if you just said something is legal, you would get not only the, quote, good, you'd get a lot of the bad, too, if only somebody had thought this through. The Oregon State Senate voted on Friday to again make possession of a minor amount of drugs a misdemeanor. The 21-8 vote came a day after the House of Representatives voted 51-7 to approve the legislation. That is overwhelming. Overwhelming support. Veto-proof majority. Democrats looking at this and going, my God, what have we done? And now you got the Vice President of the United States and the President of the United States in a desperate attempt to try and attract young voters, because to young voters, to Democrats, you're just stupid. Let's forgive your student loans, okay? You've been obviously, so there are a whole bunch of mutants out at Columbia paying $90,000 a year that Joe Biden will try to forgive the loans of, and if he's reelected, will forgive the loans of, protesting the existence of Jews. And you go, huh, well, do we forgive the loans before they start chanting death to America, or do we wait until after? Is that a caveat? Do we have to make that a prerequisite in order to get the loans forgiven? You feeling all right about that? You good about where the president is taking the country? And oh, by the way, go ahead and do all the drugs you want. We need, you think that the way to appeal to young voters is to saddle everybody else, and young voters meaning young voters who went to college, who didn't pay their way through college, who took out loans, or, you know, the just them. Everybody else, the ones who paid their way, the ones who got academic scholarships, the ones who worked hard, or the ones who went straight into the workforce, whatever, didn't go to college, which is the vast majority of people, you're all screwed. You got to pick up the tab for the people who will now go and spend 4 years smoking weed that the federal government wants to make legal and probably tax the hell out of. They want to do that. Pick up their tab. They think that that is the key to success, to getting young voters, is get them high and forgive them of massive amounts of debt. And it's not forgiving. The debt doesn't disappear. They're shifting the debt to you. If you're not currently paying student loans, they're giving you somebody else's student loans. It's very nice. Why should you have to go through life being responsible? So to sit there and watch this, and with Joe Biden's major accomplishment as a United States senator for 40 years or whatever it was, and he used to talk about this, he used to brag about it, was the 1994 crime bill. The 1994 crime bill, which, if I remember correctly, was part of the three strikes and you're out law. There were all sorts of provisions in there. See, people got sick of crime, kind of like they are now. Back then, Democrats didn't reject what people wanted to try and appeal to their fringe. It was still a radical fringe that didn't want anybody in prison for anything, and they were still whining about there's too many of this color of person and that color of person in prison, and it's horrible and awful, and you're monsters and what have you. They just weren't listened to. They were looked at as the fringe kooks that they are. Now they're elected officials. So Joe Biden, who used to say, I authored the crime bill, which he didn't, but he was involved in it, had to apologize for the crime bill when he ran for president in 2020 in order to appease the Democrats, his only legislative accomplishment, and he apologized for it. So between Kamala Harris and Joe Biden, Kamala Harris as Attorney General of the state of California, and Joe Biden as a participant and a self-proclaimed author of the crime bill, are probably responsible for the imprisoning of more people of color than any two human beings in the history of this country. Directly responsible. They don't point that out. Suddenly, history began anew once they decided that what they used to do is no longer useful. They don't really acknowledge it anymore. Kamala Harris doesn't bother to do that. She just says, no, but it's time the justice system lives up to its name. People are smoking weed and we shouldn't be doing this, that, and the other thing. But I go back to the question I asked you at the beginning of this. Is anything gotten better? Has anything gotten better since weed was decriminalized or legalized where you are, wherever you are? Has life gotten better? I don't go to New York anymore. I try to avoid it as best I can. It's just a cesspool. It's just gross. And I don't know. I feel like I've done enough there in New York. Maybe if you're 25 years old, you go, man, if I can afford to live in New York, it'll be awesome. And it would be, but not when you're married, not with kids. But you walk down the streets of New York, and what used to be just the smell of urine on concrete is now overridden by the smell of marijuana and urine on concrete and feces on concrete and homeless people on concrete. Everybody looked, all the states looked at Colorado when they went first and they decriminalized marijuana, then legalized recreational marijuana. And what were the stories about? Oh, these are huge cash businesses. The state is taxing the hell out of it. Can't use credit cards to buy weed because of federal law, but you can use cash. And I remember all the news stories about people with large bags full of cash having to go to the bank. Because it was a total, I don't even know if it's still a total, I think it's still a total cash business. But it was just total cash business. And that was the same thing that all the other politicians looked at was, my God, that guy's got a duffel bag full of like $100,000 from like a weekend. He's taking it to the bank. They're going to tax the hell out of it. Government is taxing the hell. Colorado saw a huge boom and when it came to tax revenue. And they're like, other states, within a year, were like, we need to do the same thing that Colorado is doing. We can't allow Colorado to collect all that money. We need to collect that money. Nobody thought, well, maybe we should wait a few years to see what the impact is. The impact hasn't been all that great. The impact is that Colorado's major cities, where the marijuana dispensaries are largely concentrated, have seen a massive influx in homeless people, in drug users. Well, less, it's slowed because other places have decided to follow the stupid business model. And if you're a junkie, you don't have to travel that far anymore. But with massive amounts of drug users and homeless people coming in, it didn't really work out all that well economically for there, because nobody goes, you know what, there's a huge underserved population here that nobody's selling clothes to the homeless. Yeah, because they don't have any money. Nobody's really cornered the junkie market because junkies' only priority in life is drugs. They don't bring new businesses in. Junkies are us. Come get your new worn-out jeans here. It'll be wonderful. The $1 shower store. It'll be great. Junkies don't really care about showering. It'll rain eventually. They're like your obnoxious neighbor who's like, I'm never going to wash the car because it'll rain eventually. I don't have to worry about that. Nobody thought, should we? Could we? Is all they cared. What do we get? We get money out of it. Well, what are the opportunity costs? What are the other impacts? What are the ripples of throwing that stone in the water? And we're seeing it. It doesn't matter. It's the same thing with, like I said, I'm watching NHL playoffs. And you watch it and you go, or going to a commercial break, and there it's on ESPN. Like, hey, ESPN has an official sports book. Really? Really? There was Pete Rose is still banned from baseball for life because he bet on baseball. Oh, yeah, he bet on the Reds. And he bet on them to lose sometimes. And, oh, it tainted the sanctity of the game. We cannot have gambling in it. No, people forget Mickey Mantle and Willie Mays were suspended after they retired from baseball for a year. Why? Because they worked as greeters at casinos. You know, they have athletes out back, especially back in the 70s. They have former boxers greeting people as they go into the casino because the guy's usually broken. Baseball players, Mickey Mantle drank himself broken. They could always make some money being themselves. And one way to do it was a casino. It'd pay him a lot of money to go, hey, be seen there and take pictures, have a drink with fans, shoot craps, whatever. Major League Baseball said, you're ruining the sanctity of the game. You're tarnishing the beauty of the game by associating yourself with a casino after they retired. Now Major League Baseball has, what, three or four official sports book companies, partners? Is there anybody involved with Major League Baseball that doesn't have a sports book on the side? You can't watch a game of any sport without every commercial going, hey, here's how you do it. Here's how you get $150 for the first bet and you get it back. And you're like, oh. Now, is society better off for that or is society not better off for that? If you have a jeweler's loop and you freeze the commercial, You can spot at the bottom of it the disclaimer, if you have a problem gambling, call this phone number, but otherwise, just keep on doing it. In a time of massive inflation, when people are going into deeper and deeper credit card debt because they can't afford the staples in life and they're putting off paying for things and juggling every month because they can't get by, is anybody going, well, at least I can blow $500 on the big game this weekend? I don't care what people do with their money. It's their money. The problem is being encouraged by government to do it, being enabled and empowered by government to do it, so that the government can tax you for it. That's the government is supposed to be of, for, and by the people, supposed to protect the people, not be the enabler of people because the government wants to get its beak wetter. I told you before, in Michigan, it is completely different. Well, they have the sports book everywhere, but you can get casino games too. The casinos, they're thinking about doing that here in Maryland. The casinos. You can play roulette. You can play blackjack. You can play slots, whatever you want, on your phone. I'm sorry, but I'm no puritanical lunatic, but if you can't drive for a half an hour to go to a casino, why do we have to make it easier for you to gamble? Shouldn't it require some kind of effort on your part to gamble? You want to smoke weed? Fine. Recognize that it's against the law. You want to put the fine, not encourage it, not tax the hell out of it, but maybe say we're gonna decrease the penalty or something like that. You want to do that? Okay. Take baby steps. But look at the consequences of it. Ask yourself, is the ready availability of, when I was a kid, there was no gambling. It was Vegas and Atlantic City. Then there were occasional casinos on Indian reservations. There weren't really any Indian reservations in Michigan, but then they just decided to declare certain things Indian tribal land or what. I don't know how they did it, but suddenly a few casinos popped up. And then Detroit was watching $1 million a day go over to Windsor, Ontario, because they opened a casino, big neon lights across the Detroit River casino. And they said, well, we need to get a piece of that action. And so they put three casinos in the city. You want to be depressed, go to a casino. They're all over the place here. Go to a casino that whatever day it is that the Social Security checks come in. Go the day after. When the Social Security checks come in, go to a casino. Anytime, day or night, it doesn't matter. And you will see elderly people just sitting there hitting the bet max button on the penny slots or the quarter slots or whatever slot it is. You just go, what the hell have we done? We've just numbed everybody, placate everybody. Get them gambling. Get them high. Get them wasted. Get them whatever. Let them do whatever they want. That's fine. Don't pretend there aren't repercussions for it. Don't pretend there aren't ripples when you throw that rock in that water. We don't fully understand all of them when it comes to drugs. We don't fully understand all of them when it comes to gambling. We're all relatively new in this process. But so far, none of them are good. Not a one of them are good. You know, I want to do this. I was going to talk about this yesterday, but it just got away from me. So in the time we have left, I just want to mention this. The Rock and Roll Hall of Fame inductees were announced yesterday. Just change the name to the Music Hall of Fame. Like, honestly, change the name to the Music Hall of Fame. Why not the Music Hall of Fame? It's not rock and roll anymore. The inductees this year are Ozzy Osbourne. Okay, Ozzy Osbourne belongs. I'm surprised Ozzy wasn't in there already. Peter Frampton. I don't know that Peter Frampton deserves. Maybe they're running out of bands to put in there. Maybe they're running out of musical acts. But I think you have to have been around for 20 years, and that's it. So your first album had to come out like 20 years ago. But Peter Frampton, obviously longer than that, probably 40 years since maybe even 50 some years since he first came out, but he had one album. It's a double album. Frampton Comes Alive. It was huge, issued, as the joke is, to every person that lived in the suburbs in 1978 or whatever year it was, but it was one album. There's name a second Peter, and I guess if you're alive at the time, you could probably name a second Peter Frampton song, but I Want You to Show Me the Way. Okay. Fine song. I prefer the Dinosaur Jr. cover, but that's beside the point. But it's worthy of Hall of Fame? I don't know. Foreigner? Yeah, the Foreigner had quite a few hits. Okay. Dave Matthews Band? It makes me want to vomit a little bit, but I can understand it. Then we get to Cher. All Temperature Cher. I don't know that she belongs in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. She, in fact, doesn't belong in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. She doesn't do rock and roll. She does pop music at best. She's got a couple of songs that were hits. That's it. Okay, I guess an argument could be made that if, you know, it's music, Cher could go in. Mary J. Blige, not rock and roll. Not rock and roll. Cher, not rock and roll. Mary J. Blige, not rock and roll. R&B. I'm not calling for a second, separate but equal R&B Hall of Fame, but you don't call yourself the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame and then let people in who don't do rock and roll. That brings us to Kool & the Gang. I like Kool & the Gang. I like Kool & the Gang. Not rock and roll. And then A Tribe Called Quest. A Tribe Called Quest is a rap group that is, quite frankly, not any good. They're influential in that people who are good always cite them, like the Wu-Tang Clan. And I know I'm talking to a lot of people whose eyes are glazing over at the moment, but like the Wu-Tang Clan, like, oh, I love the Wu-Tang Clan. Nobody really loves, you like certain songs, it's a novelty. Nobody would sit there and go, they're objectively good. They're not objectively good. They managed to put something out that you enjoy. It's different than being objectively good. The Bloodhound Gang, if everybody remembers them, they did that song, Human Nature, whatever, the You and Me Baby Ain't Nothing But Mammals, so let's do it like they do on the Discovery Channel. It's a novelty song. It's not a good song. It's an enjoyable song. If you're drunk and you want to dance, you could dance to that song. But nobody goes, you know what, let's listen to this musically and dissect it from a musical standpoint. No, because it's crap in that sense. That's kind of what most of what Tribe Called Quest is. That's what Wu-Tang is. There's far too many people and far too many cooks in the kitchen. I say that as somebody who went and saw Old Dirty Bastard when he was called Big Baby Jesus at a concert in Northampton, Massachusetts in the early 2000s. So you look at the nominees. Dionne Warwick winning the Musical Excellence Award. Dionne Warwick? All I know about Dionne Warwick is That's What Friends Are For and the Psychic Friends Network. I wonder if she saw this one coming. Jimmy Buffett? That Jimmy Buffett wasn't in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame already is sad because he just died. But also, maybe there's a reason. Again, musically, I've seen him. I saw him twice, I think it was, because of a girlfriend. And it was a fine concert. The people there really enjoyed it. I knew like two songs. That was it. And both times. I never like went back and go, yeah, I want to listen to the Jimmy Buffett stuff. It just doesn't do it for me. MC5, rock and roll. Okay, fine. Big Mama Thornton, definitely a precursor to rock and roll to be in there. But at a certain point, either the place has to change its name or recognize that it's not about rock and roll anymore, or get a little bit more selective. The problem is, just like the Baseball Hall of Fame that won't let in Pete Rose, but let in Harold Baines, like a 286 hitter, couple of hundred home runs, good, solid player. If you're picking a team, you would eventually, you know, four or five people down, pick Harold Baines. Well, it's the Hall of Fame. Well, how did Harold Baines get in there? Harold Baines got in there because there was nobody else eligible that was any good. And they would either have nobody get in or Harold Baines. Nothing against the Harold Baines fans out there, but let's be honest about it. That's what most of these things are. They've succeeded themselves into irrelevance, I guess. All right, that is enough for today, I say. I've heard enough of my voice anyway, so let us get on with it and announce the winner since I was too lazy to do it yesterday. The winner, and I'm assuming this is a real name and a real location, which narrows it down to probably somewhere in the neighborhood of, I don't know, 150,000 people. Greg from Texas. Congratulations, Greg from Texas, which I assume is short for Gregory or Greg Anthony, which isn't a word. You have a message from me. Let me know. You get the book, and congratulations on that. And then I will announce right now the one that is going to, well, you know what? Hell with it. I'm going to wait until, what day is today? Actually, you know, I'm going to wait until Monday's show to put it out there because why not? It's already like midweek. It just gets screwed up. I'm trying to get back on schedule. So you'll find out on Monday what it is. Congratulations, Greg from Texas. And congratulations to everybody. Just being you. I'll see you tomorrow.